Hello and welcome to the Fast Podcast. Today I am joined by the lovely Tyler, who, I'll let her tell you a little bit about herself. So, hello, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. So I met Georgina through a mutual friend. We did a shoot together. I am talking today about me being in the modelling industry and how it's affected my mental health and my self-esteem, amongst other things.
Yeah, and we're just gonna, again, we're just winging it at the moment, so we'll just see what happens, see what comes out of it. But let's start with how you kind of first got into the modelling world. Like, is it something you've always wanted to do, or where did the, like, you know, desire to do that come from?
So weirdly, there was never a desire for it. I went to my mum's 40th birthday party.
Nice.
And there was a woman there, and she was a stylist, so she wanted, well, she came up to me and she said, I'd like to style you for a shoot.
Okay.
So that was the first time I'd ever come across it. I'd never thought about it before that. And then I went to her house and she dressed me all up. She made her own garms and stuff. So
okay, cool.
She took me to her house and put me in loads of different garms and we did a shoot in her spare room. And then after that, I was like, actually, I really enjoyed it. At first, I was so scared because obviously you've never done it before. You feel really stiff.
Yeah.
And like,
I think it's hard to be, like, natural in front of a camera, like, just anyway, but let alone, you know, you being the one that's, like,
yeah, because you can't,
main focus.
It's like, you try and, especially this happened with loads of my first shoots as well, like, you try to think, right, today I'm going to be dead confident, and today I'm going to walk out and be like, yes.
I own this place.
Yeah, but you can't, because you've got all these people looking at you, and you're like, oh my God, like, start panicking. It was so hard at first. At first, I didn't really like it that much, because
yeah.
I used to feel really uncomfortable, but I suppose it just gets better with time.
Yeah.
And it definitely depends on, like, who, what kind of people are at your shoot and who are there. Because I've been at shoots before where I felt really uncomfortable because of the people that are around. But when people make you feel quite comfortable, then naturally you feel a bit more relaxed.
Yeah. So what kind of, like, things would make you feel uncomfortable on a shoot? Was it just, like, I know you mentioned it would be, like, the people on the shoot, but, like, would it be if they were telling, you know, oh, get in this position or do this, do that? That sounds sexual. I didn't mean it.
It was more like, so, for example, I'll give you two examples. So the first example, I won't name the shoot or what it was, but I went to it and I was sort of there all day. So I'd got there at 9 a.m, which is fine. Obviously, I don't mind being there all day, but my makeup and hair was done twice. So we're like lathering makeup on my face, which was, I don't know, because I don't wear a lot of makeup anyway. I know that that has to be a thing for shoots, so
yeah.
It's not like I rule it out, but it just changes my face completely when you put too much on.
Yeah.
And then when you sat around, so by the time I actually come to doing my part of the shoot, it was like 5 p.m, and every single person had already shot, and then so there was like all the hair team, all the photographers, all the models, and bear in mind this was like, I don't know, maybe my third or fourth shoot.
Yeah.
And that everyone was watching.
Right, okay.
And then they put me in this really, really tight, not very nice outfit, and then I was stood in front of the camera and they were like, you know, when you can see people getting like a bit angry at you.
Yeah.
I could sense it, that I wasn't giving them what they wanted me to give. So I started feeling more uncomfortable, and they're like, no, do this. And it was just, I don't know, it just feels a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And I don't think that when you're first a model, I don't think you get the, like, people don't think about that. They just throw you in.
They almost just think about the end result and what they want.
Yeah, or compare you to other models and think like, well, that model did that absolutely great and did it fine. Why can't she do it like that?
Yeah.
It can't work like that, especially because I'm not with an agency, and I never have been. So I've never been like doing shoots on such a regular basis that I just pick that stuff up.
Meow by the cat there. No, I feel like, I mean, I've never done modelling, never will do modelling. I'm just not made out for modelling. But I feel like, I mean, coming from like the photographer side of things, I kind of make a conscious effort to make people feel relaxed, because it's like, especially from the end, like talking about like the end result, like you can, the camera picks up everything, so if somebody like feels uncomfortable,
you're gonna look
uncomfortable. Definitely. You're not gonna feel relaxed. And I think, I mean, especially like some of the shoots me and you have done together, like the end photographs we do are always like the best, because it's like you've progressed, you're getting in the mode, you're getting in the vibe, and you kind of like, you know, once you're in the moment and you feel fine, then that's when the best result comes
when you
out.
Feel at comfort with people, and yet it's not, even though you're there to do the shoot, if you're having a nice day with those people just as if they were your friends, you don't think about the fact that you're under a pressure.
Yeah,
you just think, well, I'm with a really nice group of people and we're just having a nice time taking a few pictures,
and you're all doing something that you enjoy, so it's kind of like, you know,
and like we connected so well over different shoots, like me, you and Emma, and like just even that in itself, that's what I do love about modeling, is that you do make some nice connections and friends.
Yeah.
But then there's like, flip it the other way around and you can feel really like uncomfortable. Because I have been at shoots before where, like, I suppose it's my own problem as well. It's about how I feel in my own head that I feel uncomfortable around other girls, because maybe, you know, they're not as approachable. And that freaks me out. But obviously, that's my own problem. That's something that I need to work on. But I would just say that if I was that person and I could see someone that was probably like sat on their own, then I'd probably just go over and say like, hi, like, you okay?
Yeah, definitely. And it doesn't take long to kind of like take that moment to be like almost like recognize that somebody's feeling a bit like that.
Definitely, you can see it.
Yeah, and go over and just be like, you know, you all right?
How's your day going? Have you done many shoots before? It's just like a couple of questions.
Nice conversation.
Yeah.
No, I think that's like, well, that's like one of the main things that I think it's hopefully comes from this, is just like to start a conversation with somebody, like if you can tell that they're feeling a bit of like a, you know, not sat there with a massive smile on the face or whatever, whether it's in a modeling environment, you know, you're on a shoot, you're just anyday life, it's kind of like it doesn't take much just to start that initial conversation.
Exactly.
And that conversation can massively change like your mindset and how you're feeling.
Definitely. Even if someone's just feeling lonely and has a conversation about how their week's been, that'll make them feel a tiny bit better as to what they were feeling before.
Yeah, definitely.
Because they've just had a bit of release just speaking to someone, it makes the world a difference.
100%. So picking up on like the social media side of life, which as we were saying before is like a bit of a scary thing at the moment, I think.
And
it's kind of, you know, if utilized well, then I think it's an amazing thing, especially for like, you know, if you want to do your own business or like promoting something, promoting yourself, whatever that may be, it kind of gives you that free platform to do it on. But I suppose, like, as a model, like, because do you promote yourself on Instagram or Facebook or some, like, any form of platform as a model?
Yeah, so when I don't really that much anymore. I still do to quite a minor extent, but when I was in my prime time of modelling, when I was doing shoots all the time, I became so obsessed with Instagram.
Yeah.
And, like, how many likes I would get on a picture and whether people are going to like this or having to post every single day to keep my Instagram up to date so that people notice me. And don't get me wrong, it was working. Like, people were getting in touch with me for more shoots, but I was becoming so obsessed with being on that app every single day that it was consuming my mind. And if I didn't get so many likes on a picture, I'd be like, oh my God, people don't like it. Like, it would just consume me massively. And I think that's scary, because if I didn't get so many likes on, I'd get upset.
Yeah, it would get
like,
you down.
Like, people don't like me. People don't like that picture. And that's so bad, because that's not how you should dictate yourself.
But I think it's so easily done. And that's kind of like, I mean, even just, you know, if it's not that you're promoting yourself and it's like almost like your business or whatever that you are promoting, I think if it's just, you know, a picture of you and your mates and you don't get likes, and then like some people get so absorbed by that, and it can massively affect their mental health. Like, it
definitely
can massively put them in a position where, like you said, like it can become obsessive.
Well, I was doing, so what was happening with me, because I was started like finding my way into the modeling world, I was then following models that I'd met or like following agencies and stuff like that. So my whole feed every day was just pictures of different models doing different shoots, and I'm scrolling down those shoots and comparing my face and my body to their face and their body and thinking, what's wrong with this? Why is, like, my nose, this was a massive thing, hated my nose, I wanted a nose job, like, why is my nose like this, why can't I like constantly comparing myself to other people and making myself feel rubbish. And naturally, my self-esteem went really low. And even before shoots, I'd go and like not eat before a shoot because I'd be like, right, I want to look thin for the shoot.
Yeah.
I was just not looking after my health at all, and it was so, so bad.
And I suppose if you're doing regular shoots and you're doing that, that's when it becomes like a vicious cycle, and it's almost like
you're constantly thinking about your weight every single day. Thinking about your weight, can't eat like too much bread today because I've got a shoot later on, and I don't want my belly to look bloated.
Yeah,
but that's absolutely diabolical. Like,
no, but honestly, I can I can completely relate to that. Like, I remember when Instagram kind of first came out, and like we were like, you know, we were in, I think, college when it first came out.
Yeah.
I went through like a weird stage of like being obsessed with the fact that I thought I had to be skinny, and like because it was, you know, I was probably like 18 or something, so I was kind of like a bit more naive to the fact that that was a really unhealthy thing to be obsessed with.
Yeah.
I struggled with like a bit of an eating disorder for a few years, but because of that, and like, but for me, because Instagram wasn't as a big thing, and because I kind of like, I had friends around me that were kind of like a bit like, you G, like, you look like bones, you know, are you okay kind of thing, that kind of made me come out of it. Like, but if that was nowadays, and I was like, you know, put my age and my situation and my thought process of my appearance in today's world, I know it's only like what, 5-6 years ago, but it would have been a completely different story. Like, I would know that I could have got really bad, and I know that a lot of people and a lot of, you know, boys and girls, but I think mainly women feel that pressure. And you do hear so many stories now where it's like the weight is like such a massive issue.
It's hard because it's so much worse now. I mean, I think it's always been bad, but I think it's more come to light in the past few years because you've got things as such as like plus size models, and there's a lot of debate going on about people being proud of themselves being big.
Yeah.
But it's, I think it's always been a problem. My auntie's got anorexia, and she, when, I mean, she's had it since I was a child, like really small child, but it all started because she thought that she had a big bum.
Right, okay.
And now it's so severe.
Which is sad, because having a big bum is fabulous.
Yeah, exactly. See, it's just, it's society, and it's the way that you see yourself compared to other people. And it's so hard, because it's dead easy to slip into thinking like that.
Yeah.
There'll be periods when I'm absolutely fine, and I'm like so happy with how I look and how I am.
Yeah.
But then even if you're feeling low about another aspect of your life, you can just pull yourself back into your appearance as well, because it's easy to, because you look at yourself every day.
It's almost like a roll-on effect. Like, if you're feeling down or you're having a bad day, you almost like pinpoint every bad thing that's going on, and it might not be that, you know, that things are that bad, but when you're in that mindset and you're in that kind of like, and don't get me wrong, everybody has down days, and I think that definitely should be something that, you know, more people are accepting and more people talk about. Like, we're human, we're gonna have down days, but I think it's like when you kind of grab on to like, oh, this is bad, and then this is bad, and oh my god, like everything's bad, that's when it's kind of like a really scary thing, because some people, you know, like for myself, if I'm having a bad day, like, you know, the next day I might feel a bit down, but ultimately I know that I'll snap out of it.
Yeah.
And I kind of keep my mind, if I'm having a bad day, I'll keep my mind saying to myself, you're going to be fine.
Like, yeah, you're just having a bad day. Yeah. It's okay to have this.
Yeah.
But you're going to be fine in a couple of days. 100%. But some people can't do that. And that's when they get sucked into like a black hole, essentially.
Yeah.
And they can't really get their way out of it. And then it sort of leads to depression, I guess.
Yeah. Bloody scary. But I mean, I think conversations are the most powerful thing to have. And just like, you know, if it becomes more of a thing where people can openly say to those around them, like, you know what, I've had a few bad days recently, like, and I am struggling to snap out of it. You just need somebody there to be like, come on, focus on this, focus on that.
Or just, I've only realised what you've just said in the past maybe year and a half or so, but I went through a period of not feeling like, oh, I don't want to burden people with my problems. Mm-hmm. So when I had things going on, I'd just be like, right, well, I'm just not going to tell anyone because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to make them feel negative or upset. So yeah. I'll just deal with it on my own, and then when, once it's done, it'll be fine. But that ends up making you feel worse, because 100%. You do just need an ear sometimes. You just need someone to listen. Even if they're not giving you advice, just being there while you have a cry and have a rant about whatever it is that you're feeling upset about. I used to go through really bad periods with my mum because she could see that when I was living with her, she could see that things were getting on top of me and I was feeling really rubbish. But I'd just be like, I don't want to talk about it, and I'd be quite like abrupt about it.
Yeah.
And she used to say to me, like, why don't you just talk to me? And I'm like, I don't need to. I don't want to burden you with my problems. But now, if something's going on, I'm like, well, sometimes it depends what it is. But sometimes if it's something minor, I will just, like, gather my thoughts in my own head and sort of come to a reasonable solution and then tell her what's going on after I've done it. But if it's something really bad, I'll go straight to her and I'll be like, Mum, this is going on, and I just need a cry.
And all you need is a cry and a cup of tea.
And you feel so much better. Even just after a little cuddle off your mum, it's just so nice.
Yeah.
You just feel like, right, okay, I've got it out now.
Yeah, life's going to be okay.
Yeah, it's a relief.
Definitely. And I think as well, like, again, going back to social media, like, nobody posts, you know, of, oh, I've had a bad day today, or, you know, oh, I'm feeling down, or kind of like that kind of thing. It's very much, you know, post you having the best time.
Yeah.
You could have even had a bit of a rubbish night, but you've got a nice picture and you put it on and it's like, best night ever. And
take relationships as an example. So you'll find that, like, you'll look and see some posts of a couple. Take me and my ex-boyfriend, for example. Over Instagram, we look like the happiest, luriest couple in the world, and I think a lot of people just thought that, like, we were just really nice. Like, we did have, like, a lot of good times, but there was such a bad period, and people had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
Because
you don't post that, do you?
They just perceive what they want, and you give out that you're happy when you're not. And you see so many pictures over Instagram of couples where probably they could be quite miserable.
Yeah.
It's like, there's another thing, actually. Did you see that TV show, The Circle?
I briefly watched it. And
so I didn't actually watch it, but I got a message on Instagram of the producers, and they asked me to apply for it. They wanted me to go on it. Yeah. So at first I did. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. But then I applied for it, and then they called me and I had like a telephone interview. And the guy on the phone, oh my God. So he was asking me questions. It was basically like a telephone interview. And one of the questions was, if you were to go on the show, what would you do to make people like you? So basically, do you know what the show is about?
I think it was it about, like, people and they could go on and pretend to be somebody else, and it was all the
yeah
virtual
so basically
messages.
It was in this apartment block, and each person, I think this is how he explained it to me on the phone, I didn't actually watch it, but he said it would be an apartment block, each person has their own apartment, none of them know what each other look like or anything, they don't know anything about each other, but they've all got this social media thing called The Circle, and they talk to each other through it, and they have to sort of, it's a competition of likability basically, so the person that's least liked gets voted out. So when
who would vote them out? The public or
no?
The
so
group of people?
Apparently the group of people. So they'd make friendships and stuff, and then start like all over a social media platform, and then based on who they thought was like the most popular and stuff like that, or who needed to go, they'd vote them out.
Right. Okay.
So the guy was on the phone asking me questions.
That sounds weird.
Yeah, and he was like, "So if you went in, what would you do to make people like you?" And I was like, I actually answered, I was like, well, I think I'd just beat myself.
Which is what you should bloody do.
Exactly. But he sounded so disappointed with what I'd said, so I was feeling a bit iffy. And then he said, this is an example. So sometimes on a rainy day, I'll post a picture of one of my holiday pictures and be like, oh, you know, holiday day in the sun. So, like, what do you do, like, on your, what do you use your social media platforms for? And I was like, wait, so you've just told me that on a rainy day you would pretend that you were on holiday with a nice sunny picture because it was raining outside.
That's very weird.
Very weird. So I was like, well, I use my Instagram for modelling, but I didn't know what to say. I was choking up loads, and obviously I didn't get on it, but I'm bloody glad I didn't. But, oh yeah, it was so weird.
That does sound, I mean, I don't know, but it's scary because people do that, don't they?
Like, yeah.
It's just, and I think that's why it's so scary that, you know, younger people, like, you know, social media is always going to be there now. Like, it's never going to go.
Yeah.
And I do think, you know, like, I was talking to somebody at my work the other day, and they were talking about how, well, I think it was a parent that they knew or something. They were saying, oh, they didn't want their child to have a mobile phone.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like an iPhone or an, you know, an Android or
yeah.
something. They just kind of wanted them to have a basic phone to make calls to them or whatever.
Mm.
And it was like one of their first weeks at high school. So they would have been, what, 11, 12.
Yeah.
And within two, 3 weeks, she had bought them a phone because she said they were that's like much of an outcast because they didn't have a phone or they didn't have social media, that they were almost like going to be a target to be bullied because they didn't
that's
have it.
That's insane.
I know.
My mum did. Right, my mum did not let me have a phone all the way through primary school. A lot of other children had phones by year six, and my mum would not let me have one. She was like, no, no, no. But then when I got into year seven, she was like, obviously you're travelling now, like, to and from on your own. So
it's
she
like
got
a
me.
Safety thing, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, just so she knows where you are when she needs to ring you. But she got me a Nokia, like a little Nokia like that. There was no, like, mention of smartphones or anything. And it wasn't really a massive thing when I was in, like, year seven, when
well,
I was
young.
Well,
I don't think they really came. I mean, I got a phone in year six, and it was a Nokia. And I just all I did was play Snake on it.
Exactly.
And that was like the best
thing. I didn't
thing
even
ever
have any credit. It was just so my mum could ring me, like, you okay?
But I don't think, because obviously we still kind of had like Blackberries going through high school. I don't, like, the first iPhone that came out was probably when we were maybe, you know, oh God, I'm going to make a guess of about 16.
I think it was a bit younger.
Was it?
Yeah.
Because I thought I was in first year of college. I mean, that was probably when I got my first one, when I was first year of college or something.
I don't know. It might have been about 16 when I first saw an iPhone 3, was it?
Yeah.
Was it 3?
Which is scary that they're now probably like, a child would look at that now and be like, this is so
old. It's like 20 quid now.
But it's scary to think that from the age of, you know, 11 years old and you're in high school, you see all this stuff online, and like we were saying just then, like, a lot of the stuff is just like not actually real life. It's like very much, you know, and you'll know it from the modeling world that you know how you pose and how you, like, you know, certain angles with your camera and stuff, it does make you look different. It makes you kind of, you know, elongate your body if you're further down, like, angle-wise and stuff, and, you know, sucking in to make you look slimmer. But people to kind of see that from such a young age, and you not really be aware that, like, that's not actually real. Like, that's not how you meant to look. Not how you meant to look, that sounds awful, but I mean, like, that's not like a, they don't actually look like that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, like, just really scary to think that, you know, that's just the world now, isn't it?
But have you seen that advert of the woman? They basically taking a picture of a woman, just normal face. She looks like she's got bags under her eyes, just as how a normal person would look on a normal day.
Yeah.
And they take a picture of her, and then they show the whole editing process and how it ends up being at the end once they're finished. And honestly, it doesn't look like the same woman.
That's
because
bizarre.
They've thinned her nose, they've put her cheekbones in, they've made her jaw, like, more defined, all her skin's dead smooth, even her hair, like, they've whisked out more, like, it was crazy. And by the end of the, when they showed what it was advertising, it was like a billboard of something, and comparing it from that woman to the first woman, it was completely different. And that's just essentially what you're saying to kids, is that, you know,
this is what you should look like.
Yeah.
This is what a normal person looks
like. Yeah, and this is why there's so much problem with teenagers wanting to look like celebrities and movie stars, because that's our role models, apparently,
and that's what's being put in front of them all the time, like, wherever they are.
Exactly.
And I think that's the scary thing with, like, reality TV show, like, stars now.
Definitely.
Like, you know, first of all, like, you know, the actual shows, like, I mean, I've definitely watched them in the past, and they're funny, and it's kind of like a bit of amusement to like watch it, you know.
Yeah.
I call it chewing gum for the eyes, because it's very much just like you can sit and watch that. That's and just a good be term. Like, yeah, this is, you know, I'm not taking much in, but it's just, it's on. But I like, every now and then, more out of curiosity and kind of a bit of fascination that that's an actual, this is the world now, but I'll go on some like reality stars' Instagrams and the amount of work that they do to their body and the kind of like the image that they're wanting to achieve and that they're kind of like promoting is so scary. And you know, they're getting given all of these like cosmetic surgery procedures and all this done for free to promote it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, it's scary.
It's a really hard one because like we were watching the other day, we were watching, so you know, is it Jada Pinkett Smith? Is that Will Smith's wife?
Jada. That rings a bell.
I think it's Jada Pinkett Smith. She does like this, it's a video podcast on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
But basically what they do is she'll sit there with the kids. So it's Willow and...
Jaden. Is it Jaden?
Jaden. Yeah, I think so. So she'll sit there and basically speak about all different topics. So one of them that we watched the other day was they were talking about how Willow and Jaden were born into this world and the effect that it made on it, it made on them. Yeah. So obviously,
because how old are they? They're probably about 20 now, are they?
I don't know how old they are, but they're a lot older. I think they're like teenagers, maybe early 20s. Yeah. But they were talking about Willow and when she first did, you know, I whip my hair. And how much of like a hit it was with everyone. But it sent her over the edge. She had a breakdown, like she was, her mental health was so bad.
Because
she was so young and she was thrown into it. And Chelsea was talking to me the other day about her music, and basically when you listen to her music, all of her music now is about really,
it's quite
like,
deep,
in depth,
it?
And like interesting, intellectual, like that's how she tells the stories through her songs.
Yeah.
But Whip My Hair is a complete opposite of what she does now.
It's very much like the pop culture.
Yeah,
kind
and
of
she,
like...
I think she was sort of like made to do it in that sort of way so it would get big, but it worked, but in the process it messed with her head so much because she couldn't handle it. And that's a prime example of you're literally teaching a kid from a young age that you need to be this certain way to make money and to be dead popular within the world,
but you're not thinking
it's not making you happy.
Yeah,
it's not making the kids happy in the end.
It's like when you see like bloggers and influencers nowadays, it's kind of like, you know, if you get into that at a young age and you're just constantly, you're almost in the limelight then, and you're almost like,
you don't even get a chance to breathe.
Yeah, you're like opening yourself up to the world to kind of comment on your life and your appearance,
what you look like.
You're
how many magazines do we have where they're like, oh, this person's put so much weight on, look at her jelly belly.
God.
And it's like, guys,
I hate it.
It's so bad.
It's horrible.
And what about for that actual star who's in the limelight all the time?
I know.
And has to be constantly criticized on what they look like.
I know. And I mean, I know it's, you know, you've got to have a job and, you know, you got to earn money and whatnot, but it scares me to think that there's companies that are making money from putting people down and like shaming people, like body shaming them, and like, why, like, you know, why is that a thing that's still accepted in society? Like, who's reading it? Who's genuinely like getting absorbed with other people's lives to pick out the negative things and the drama and the gossip that, you know, yeah, they're almost thriving off that.
Yeah.
Like, it baffles my head a little bit.
I think these people have to think, what if it was their family member?
Yeah.
Because...
or themselves.
Yeah.
On that front cover.
Yeah. How would you feel? People don't take into consideration other people's feelings enough these days, because it's like, there's a lot of money making in it, and unfortunately, greed just takes over.
I know. And jealousy is the most ugly thing as well.
Definitely.
Oh my God, the po-po here.
Levin June.
Levisume. Is it Levisume or Levisume?
Levisume.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to pronounce it before and my pronunciation is not very good. And I was like,
I've never been here before, I moved here.
It looks really nice.
Yeah.
Like, sorry, it. We've definitely just trailed off there. Just talking about the popo in Levisume or Levisume. Whichever one you prefer. Okay, so I'm gonna ask just, you know, about, I know we've picked up on mental health and kind of like well being and and all that. And you know, I think luckily we are, it is becoming like a lot more of a topic which people are recognizing that they kind of have to, you know, like focus their attention on and focus around energy on. I think it's a lot more kind of, you know, people are realizing that your mental health is something you have to kind of focus on at times, and you have to give yourself time to kind of, you know, look after yourself in that sense, not just the physical sense, but your headspace as well. But so, like, do you use like any like apps at all, like, for, you know, even if it's like a meditation app or kind of like a well-being app or anything like that? Or is there kind of anything that you use to, you know, to, you know, I don't know, I've just said you know three times, or not necessarily an app, but something like, for example, there's apps that, you know, you're like, why do I keep saying, you know?
It's a good filler.
I'll edit that bit out. My other filler is 100%. I go, 100%, yeah, 100%.
Mine's, yeah, definitely.
You know, yeah, definitely. You know, yeah, definitely. Uh-huh. But so there's things like writing apps that you can kind of like use as a journal, or there's things that I think there's one about you kind of guided meditation, this Headspace. Have you ever used any apps like that?
Well, I started trying to use Headspace, but that was back when I was at my mum's, and I think it's definitely so important. If you're going to try and meditate, you need to be in a really calm and nice space. I think lighting's very important when I'm meditating. Like, I like to have some nice light, or late at night before I'm going to go to bed. But I was trying to do it at my mum's, and I've got a 3-year-old baby sister, so it was quite difficult to even switch concentrate. Off. Yeah, because even trying to get up early in the morning, Saskia wakes up about 6:30 anyway.
Oh my gosh, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, so there's never a really peaceful time to do it. And then moving in here has been... it's been really consuming. You've like trying to get my room done and move all my stuff in and settle here. I've only just really settled in, and I've been here for a while now. So I'm going to pick it back up, but I do, I don't do it in forms of apps. I do, like, so I'll have a journal. So I write in a journal.
Yeah.
My mum also got me a dream book. So
amazing.
You keep it next to your bed, and then when you have like an intense dream or whatever, you write it down. And then you can look into the meanings of your dreams and stuff.
I love that.
And then my auntie's bought me, actually, have you heard of the Happy Journal by Fern Cotton?
Yes.
Yeah, so I've got that as well.
Amazing.
Yeah, so I think I just prefer to actually do it on paper.
Yeah.
Just because, I don't know, I mean, I'm on my phone enough, so having an app there, I think it's like, sometimes you just want to need to put the phone away.
Yeah.
And take your mind off it.
There's a lot of distractions on your phone as it is. So
yeah,
it's kind
if
of
a notification
like,
pops up, instantly you're gonna want to go and like check it or see if it's important or whatever. It's yeah. I think sometimes just take a break from the phone.
Yeah,
definitely.
No, but that's interesting, because I feel like there are like a lot of apps out there, and they kind of like, you know, trying to push people to like, whether it's meditation or writing or journaling or whatever it may be, there's kind of like more and more coming out at the moment. But I think it's like, so sorry, you mentioned that you do meditation like already. Like, what, how long have you been meditating for?
Not long at all, and I'm still not even anywhere near where I need to be. But I started going, it was last year I was going through a really, was it last year? No, it might have been the year before. But anyway, I was going through a really hard patch, and I was thinking about ways that I could make myself feel better. And I didn't really know how to do it. But then someone I know recommended the Buddhist Center in the Northern Quarter.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, I was feeling pretty lonely. It was last year. I was feeling really lonely. I didn't really want to speak to my friends about it too much, because the problem was within... the group.
Right, okay. So it wasn't like you didn't want to kind of go and confide in...
Yeah, because it was... long story anyway. But so I went to the Buddhist Center, and there was just a group of people that, you know, you don't know any of them, obviously, if you go on your own. And have you ever been in the Buddhist Center?
No.
It's so nice. So you walk in, it's like a shop at the front, and then you go into the back, go up the stairs, and it's like a huge room. So you all get like a couple of pillows each, and like a mat and a blanket. And the class is with a different teacher each week.
Okay.
So I think it's like £5. It's really cheap. So I'd go every Saturday morning, about 11 o'clock, I think it was, meet these people. So you'd have a different teacher, and the different teacher would do like different ways of meditation. So one of them would do like a lot of discussion, and you would talk a lot. Sorry for the long pause. Yeah, you do something different each week and speak about a different story. And it wouldn't just be the meditation. You'd get into groups and they'd give you like, they'd tell you a story and ask you a question, one question about it, and you all had to discuss in your groups of what maybe that meant to you. They'd give you like a word, say like evil, say what does the word evil mean to you?
Okay.
And then you'd all discuss it in these groups, and then like some people would write stuff down, and then you'd go back and you'd just ask one person out of each group to explain what you talked about.
Okay.
And then at the end you do the meditation, and then you'd wrap yourself in a blanket at the end and like lie down and just chill out. But then when you come out of your meditation, you feel drunk. Like I was feeling drunk every time, because I was just like,
really,
you could tell it was definitely making an effect on me. Yeah. And I started to feel better after doing it. So then I started trying to do it at home, and then that's where it was just becoming a bit of a problem. But then I didn't have time to go back and do it at the Buddhist centre. So I've not done it for a while now. So I do need to get back into it.
That sounds amazing though, because that almost sounds like a form of therapy in a sense as well. Like,
oh my god, definitely
having that those discussions and yeah, that conversations around like, you know, different topics and stuff, which is amazing. Like,
I met a really cool guy called Luke there as well. We've lost touch now, but we on that after the first session where I'd been, he spoke to me after and he's like, have you done this before? And I was like, no. So we went for a coffee and he was like recommending me all these books to read, like The Power of Now.
Amazing.
Which I still haven't got around to reading, but you know, it's on the list. But yeah, and he was really helping me along with it. And then he'd read so many books, he was so knowledgeable, and he had so many good answers to questions and stories to tell me. It was really interesting. But just making that really little nice connection from going to a group of people you don't know. Because if you go with a friend, I don't think it's necessarily easy to like mingle as well, because you've got each other. But when you throw yourself in on your own, then you can make some really nice bonds.
100%. I feel like that kind of reminded me of my experience in Bali. And I basically went to this like sound healing thing.
Oh my god.
And it was basically like a meditation, but through the form of sound. And you kind of went in the pyramids and you listened to loads of gongs. But before, it was kind of like, you know, they basically explain what was going to happen. And they said, you know, some people they just fall asleep and they relax. Some people get very emotional and they cry, and it's like, you know, a release of energy. And or some people kind of, you know, have a bit of like a hallucination in a sense, and like these visuals and like all these kind of different things.
Yeah.
So to me, I was a bit like, oh my god, am I gonna go west? Am I gonna like get up and start having a like walking around and being all like, oh my god, I can see aliens. But I was kind of like, you know, went in there. I'd never done anything like that before.
Yeah.
Like, and I just like let myself go, and I just had like the most amazing experience ever. Like,
really?
I kind of like started having a bit of like a visualization of just different things. Like, at one point, I kind of like in my head was I was like in a forest somewhere, and then I like kind of like jumped off somewhere, and I was in the ocean, and it was almost like this and then, but to me in my own head, like, you talk to them about like afterwards what your experience was.
Yeah.
And they were basically saying that like that kind of thing to me meant that like I was becoming free from like things, and it was almost like,
oh, wow,
I was in this position like where I was kind of like letting go of things and all this. And obviously like that's what they do, they kind of like read into certain things like that. But I'd never done anything like that before. I'd never done any sort of like, I've never done meditation really. Like, I've done bits of yoga and stuff, but never really anything like that.
Yeah.
But that kind of thing that you've just spoke about then is like, I feel like more people should do things like
definitely
that.
It is. It's, do you know what? It's hard as well when you're meditating. This is because I can't fully get to where I need to be yet. Because what they taught us in the class was that you have to try, and that's why they say, you know, when you chant,
yeah,
it's to keep your mind on like just one thing, just in your mind, because right, okay. quite easily you can try and sit there and just be with yourself and your own thoughts. But if there's like a noise outside, you think, oh, there's a car there, and then you think, oh my god, does my wheels need changing on my car? And quite easily you can be consumed into what's going on in your life.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, the one of the classes, I think we end up talking about it, and we had to chant, say, I love my family, and my life is good, and one other thing. So okay. it'd just be like me in my head, like, I love my family, my life is good. And in the end, you start feeling with yourself rather than anything that's going on around you.
Okay,
you're just focused in on your own mind. So that's, I think it's definitely, some people can actually just do it and not chant, or they must be like masters of meditation. But I think when you're starting out, it's good to just have something that you just chant to yourself in your head, because it's easier to stay within.
Amazing.
Mm.
Well, I mean, that sounds lovely. I feel like I want to do it.
Do
and I
it.
Feel like a lot, I feel like everybody should kind of like experience these different things. And I know like a lot of, you know, people deal with things in their own way. And like, mm-hmm. I think it's kind of finding your path of like, of knowing what works for you. And that's why I think it is important for people to try these different things and almost recognize that they should, you know, if even if it's writing something down once a week on a piece of paper, you might, some people might kind of like, you know, shrug the shoulders at that, and or not, and or for example, that people would probably be like, oh no, I'd never want to do anything like that. But I think it's so important to like kind of put yourself out of your comfort zone and try these things and
100%
see what happens.
I think it's important for people to know as well that everyone meditates differently. I recently went to Hebden Bridge, and there's this cute little shop in Hebden Bridge. It's called, it's something to do with pennies, I can't remember the name of it, but I went in the shop basically, and I had this coat on from Berlin, and the lady behind the counter, she was like, oh, I love your coat. And I was like, oh, it's from Berlin. And then we got chatting, and we spent the whole night together. We went to the pub, we had dinner together, really made friends with her. But basically she was working this shop on behalf of the owner, and in the shop primarily sells, it's like small, like one piece, but the guy that owns a shop, he cuts into the one piece and makes like he'll make the tree of life in the penny just by a tiny little handsaw. But he's been doing it for years and years, and like him and his wife opened the shop up together, and then she passed away. So I think it's like this shop is like something that he's so passionate about, of keeping alive as well. But Gemma was telling me that his way of meditating is to do these pennies, like how he meditates. Yeah. It's amazing how differently someone can meditate, but how it can still have such a beautiful effect on your mind and your body.
That's so lovely.
You're still having the same end goal, but you just do it in a completely different way.
I suppose it's like, it's just the idea of being able to switch off and focus your energy on one
definitely.
Sort of thing.
It's like when you go for a walk on your own. When I go for a big long walk on my own, there's nothing around me, I'll switch my phone off and I'll just walk for ages. I did it whilst I've been having like a really hard time recently. I've been going through a lot of sadness and stuff. So I went to Hebden Bridge for a night. I just booked a room away in Hebden Bridge, and I thought, right, I need to go away and gather my thoughts, get away from the city and turn my phone off.
Yeah.
So I went to stay in Hebden Bridge, and I just, I met Gemma in the end, and we became really like nice connections, good friends. And then the next day I went for this huge walk in the morning. It was snowy, but the sun was shining, and I was walking for 2 hours, and for about an hour and a half of the walk, I was out loud talking about, so I'd say one problem. I was like, right, Tyler, so this is the first problem. And I was talking to myself about why I feel like this, and, you know,
amazing,
what's the contributing factors to it. And I was thinking, right, well, what can you do to resolve it? And I literally for an hour and a half spoke to myself about all these things that I was having problems with, and trying to come up with solutions to it. And in the end, I was like, do you know what? I think the problem is with me is that I put a lot of pressure on myself to try and, like, be where I want to be when I'm only 22.
Yeah.
And I came to the decision after Hebden Bridge that I just need to have a list of goals, which is fine, but try and tick one goal off at a time and take it from there, rather than trying to achieve four goals all at once.
And almost trying to rush your life away.
Yeah, definitely. Like, all in good time. Like, it's, things are fine. You know, I can have bad days and stuff, but it's, I think there's a lot of pressure on people now to be successful or make something out of themselves, or that person's 22 in that really good position, but why am I not?
Yeah,
again, comparing yourself to others.
100%. And it's kind of like making sure that you don't. And like, I always, like, I've saw this quote like maybe like 6 months ago or something, and it was about how the most powerful tool that you have is the fact that you are you and nobody else has that.
Exactly.
And it's like, oh my God, it's so true.
Yeah.
Like, you are yourself.
Embrace who,
like,
you are. Exactly. Definitely.
I love that. Right, well, we're definitely going to come to an end now, because I feel like I could chat on to you for ages, but it's been lovely, and I don't want our listeners to not listen to it all, because it's all been fabulous. But I will leave it on this one last thing. So I'm going to ask you, I know we've spoke a little bit about mantras already, but... Mm-hmm. What would be like your main mantra? What would be the one thing that you kind of like live by each day or say to yourself often?
Even though I've not achieved it yet, be happy with who you are.
And hopefully that will come very soon for you then, if that's kind of the thing that you're focusing on.
Yeah, definitely. I think the most important thing is to love yourself, because you can't let other people love you if you don't love yourself first.
100%.
Definitely.
Oh, well, thank you very much for today. It's been absolutely
it's been a pleasure.
Lovely.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening, guys, if you're listening. Goodbye.